Part C. Directions. You will hear three pieces of recorded material. Before listening to each one, you will have time to read the questions related to it. While listening, answer each question by choosing A, B, C, or D. After listening, you will have time to check your answers. You'll hear each piece once only.
Questions 11 to 13 are based on the following monologue. You now have 15 seconds to read questions 11 to 13.
Last week, I bought a football for my little nephew. He was delighted with it and ran out into the garden to kick it about. Two apple trees substituted for goalposts. And I had to act as a goalkeeper. He kept me busy there for more than an hour. And he is only 5. Every boy has a natural impulse to kick a football about. And famous football stars are the gods of those little boys. How many dream that one day they will be gods too? Professional footballers. If a schoolboy plays very well, he may find himself in an important match. A schoolboy international, for example. The big clubs send scouts to these events to look for promising young players. An outstanding boy may be invited by a scout to register with the club that he represents as an associated schoolboy. Clubs may register schoolboys over the age of 13, although they're not allowed to play in matches until they've reached the official school leaving age. But they're well coached and trained. When one of these boys leaves school, he may, if he wishes, become an apprentice footballer to the team he has been associated with. Thus, he is taught his job in the same way as any other apprentice. Moreover, he is paid while he is being taught. At 18, the apprentice is compelled to make up his mind whether to become a professional or to return to being an amateur. This decision has to be very carefully considered. He must remember that he will always have to face very strong competition from younger and perhaps better players, always waiting and anxious to take his place. Questions 14 to 17 are based on a monologue about architects. You now have 20 seconds to read questions 14 to 17.
We have all heard stories of the architect who forgot to provide stairs or lifts in the blocks of flats he was designing. There are even sillier tales of houses designed without any doors. Certainly, many strange buildings can be seen. In past centuries, there were hardly any building restrictions, and rich people could build whatever they wanted. Sometimes their ideas were very odd indeed, and resulted in strange follies, such as a triangular cottage, or a house in the form of a pyramid, or a house disguised as a windmill. But nowadays there are a great many restrictions, both official and aesthetic, and the architect must know all of them. The artistic and creative aspects are only a small part of the modern architect's work. He or she does not simply design a building and then wait for someone else to build it. They must know all the qualities of the materials used and have to take into consideration heating, lighting, ventilation, insulation, drainage, and many other aspects that never worried our ancestors at all. In all building work, there are three main parties: the client, the architect, and the builder. The client tells the architect what he wants, or at least gives him some idea of the kind of building he or she has in mind. The architect then visits the site and prepares rough plans for the client's approval. Various authorities concerned are also consulted. When all the work has been approved in principle and the plans satisfy the client, the architect can then prepare working drawings and detailed instructions for the builder. Different builders are then invited to submit estimates for doing the work. The most economical estimate is usually accepted. So the work begins. A modern architect is the leader of a team of specialists and must coordinate all their services. There is no other profession that involves so many suppliers, contractors, consultants, authorities, and tradesmen. There are few jobs that are more difficult to carry out, and few that give more satisfaction when a project is completed successfully.
Questions 18 to 20 are based on the following interview with a biologist. You now have 15 seconds to read questions 18 to 20.
Whales, I believe, are very sensitive animals. What has been the effect of pollution on them?
There's been very little direct effect so far as we know to date. There are some bits of information about high levels of mercury and heavy metals in certain whale bodies. Whales which are caught and processed in the normal way. Whales which are washed up dead. But there's no direct evidence that it's the pollution which has caused the deaths. One example where there may be more direct evidence is in the Mediterranean. There is a steel factory pouring very heavily contaminated water off France. And there are records there of whales which appear to be burnt by the high acid concentration in the water. Another kind of pollution, apart from the chemical sort, is sound pollution. With all the heavy ship traffic in the seas, sound pollution is very considerable, and the whales do communicate by sound. We know very little about the effect of all the noise in the ocean on the whales' behavior. But it is a very serious question to consider. Can the whales still maintain contact with one another? Can they still talk to one another with all the background noise increasing year by year?
Of course, whales have to find each other for the purpose of mating and for other purposes over quite long distances, don't they?
That's correct. The noises which the whales make, they range in frequency from very low notes to very high notes. And certain frequencies have the potential ability of traveling over several hundreds of miles, perhaps even thousands of miles. But with the background noise again, whether the sound really can be picked up over that distance by the whales is a matter of real doubt now.
That is the end of part C.